Welcome. I'm your host, Henry R. Slinian, and welcome to this episode of Future Money Podcast. Before we start, I want to say a big thank you to the 500,000 of you who follow my content each week. This podcast, The Future Money, is now ranked in the top 5% of all podcasts globally on Spotify. Thousands of you from over 160 countries globally are tuning in each week. So a massive thank you for all your support. For all your loyal listeners know, my goal with this podcast is very simple. It's to go deep in some of the biggest ideas, trends, and developments we are seeing in the field of crypto, and hopefully empower you with this information, and then let you make your own decision on what their impact could be on the future of money and the future of finance. To do this, I invite each week one of the leading figures of the global crypto community to have this one-on-one conversation amongst crypto aficionados and discuss some of these topics. Today, my guest is James Delaney, who's the Director of Government Affairs at AMA. And the goal is we're going to talk about the latest, my favorite probably crypto hedge fund, crypto report that comes out every year, is the PwC, Elwood and AMA, the Global Crypto Hedge Fund Report that has a lot of insights, not only on the crypto hedge fund industry, but what we're going to focus on today on how traditional hedge funds are looking at the crypto space. So if you've been interested in finding out more about how the large hedge funds are, if they're entering the crypto space, how they're entering the crypto space, we're going to cover a lot of these developments here today. James, big thank you and welcome to the Future Money Podcast. Well, before we jump in, by the way, one interesting fun fact about James, many people may not know, is that he recently completed a charity cycle ride, literally from one side of the UK to the other, 1,000 miles ride over 10 days in a typical British summer. So, hey, James, many people think people in the crypto or in the hedge fund world are more boring, but hey, you've proved everybody wrong with this big ride. So thanks for all your charity ride you did there.
Thanks, Henry. Yeah, it was pretty relentless. Lots of ups and downs, undulating, volatile roads. Really took me to the end of my tether, excuse the pun, but a huge relief and satisfaction. Sort of persevered. So I guess it set me up well for facing the crypto asset markets.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, perseverance and surviving is something we definitely needed in the past year. Well, before we kick off as well, I just want to make a disclaimer. James works at AMA, which is the Hedge Fund Industry Association. And for full disclosure, the hedge fund where I'm a shareholder, Nine Blocks, is a member of AMA. And I've in the past sat on numerous committees of AMA in recent years, especially in Asia. So let's jump right in, James, before we kick off. And I want to also tell my personal story with this report. But before we jump in right in, James, can you tell us more about yourself and also about AMA and who represents and the type of work that AMA does?
Very happy to, Henry. So I started my career in financial services over in Brussels at the political center of the European Union, working for a public affairs consultancy firm, advising financial services businesses on their advocacy strategies, their regulatory risk analysis, corporate profile raising, and those types of areas. I then moved to a large global insurance and asset management company in their government relations team, and they'd recently acquired another firm which had propelled them from being a mostly US-centric firm for 150 years to then having operations in nearly 50 countries worldwide. So I was involved in various projects around that, and it was a fascinating time getting to travel to our offices all over the States and around Europe and the Middle East. I then joined AMA back in 2019 as a Director of Asset Management Regulation, and I also co-lead our digital assets work together with my colleague Michelle Noyes, who is AMA's Head of Americas based in New York. So AMA is a body that was initially set up in 1990, really to support and represent the interests specifically of the global alternative investment industry and fund managers in particular. So we have offices and volunteer networks around the globe. We currently have more than 2,100 corporate members spread in more than 60 countries, I believe. And together, our manager members manage in excess of $2.5 trillion in hedge fund and private credit assets. So the main thrust of what we do at AMA is advocacy work and communications. So acting on our members' behalf around all issues to do with policy and regulation. We also produce a number of educational events and research papers, as well as industry due diligence questionnaires and sound practice guides. We also organize large-scale events where our members can network And I think in total, we put on over 200 events each year in the Americas, EMEA, and APAC regions. And we also have over 130 working groups and committees, really for peer-to-peer discussion between our various members on a variety of topics. And one of those is AIMA's Global Digital Assets Working Group, the AIMA DORG, Henry, of which you're one of our members. And that was launched back in 2020 to meet our members' growing interest and their activities, as well as some of the operational challenges they were facing as they look to invest in the digital asset space. So that group is really tasked with driving our thought leadership initiatives that we're about to talk about, our regulatory engagement, and also some operational guidance for digital asset investment. So that group really, I suppose, sits at the intersection of our traditional work, so our legacy alternative investments and digital assets, and I suppose focuses on those issues that are specific to institutional buy-side investing in the space. So it's comprised of, I think it's around 350, 400 senior industry experts, including investment managers, allocators, service providers, all with an interest in the digital asset space.
Yeah, it's very interesting, James, because I think people don't realize how the hedge fund industry is actually quite involved in the digital asset space, actually. I think we'll talk about the report in a second, but actually I think what AIMA has done has been very, very impressive over the years. So can you tell us more about the report? As you know, this crypto hedge fund report has two big sections, right? One of them is really focuses on the crypto native hedge funds. But the part that I want to really focus on today, because I find the data this year is very, very interesting, is on the traditional hedge fund base and how they're looking at crypto. Can you share us more about the size and the scope and who was surveyed and the relevance when it comes to their views on digital assets?
Sure, yeah. So we were delighted to partner again with PwC and CoinShares for the third year in a row, really to complement their report on crypto native hedge funds and bringing into that our own chapter looking into the digital asset investment landscape from the point of view, as you said, of traditional or legacy hedge funds. And really what the report tried to do, or our chapter within that report, was look at the impact that notable market disruptions, if we can call them those, from last year, what those market events, what impact they had on fund managers, and how they've adjusted their investment strategies as a result. And really give an insight into what the allocation plans of hedge funds who are investing in this space might be, or what's holding some of them back from entering the crypto space. And then to what extent things like the regulatory uncertainty, for example, in the US, is creating opportunities for other jurisdictions, and how that's impacting the market and market participants as well. So in terms of sort of the data, we put together a survey that was conducted with our members in Q1 of this year. And we had around 60 fund manager members respond to that survey. I think approximately that accounted for about 280 billion in assets. So that's where the views have come from.
Yeah. So it's interesting because there's like 200 billion of assets that were surveyed, and it's interesting views on the report. Before we jump right in, you know, it's interesting, and I told this story to many people, but obviously I remember when we launched this report, you know, it was kind of my baby. I still remember I was in London having a cigar at the Hyatt Hotel in Marble Arch. And I was pissed off because there was no report that really quantified the size of the crypto hedge fund industry. And I remember seeing the guys at Elwood, which was Alan Howard's family office of Alan Howard or Brevin Howard hedge fund. And we literally started with this report. And I don't know, maybe James can confirm, but I know at PwC it was the most downloaded report in the world. You know, I ran this report for many years when I was at PwC, but I heard that it was the most downloaded report after the AIMA DDQ, which is, I find, is very interesting. It shows you how much interest there is on digital asset hedge funds.
That's true. It was our most downloaded report last year, I believe, the year before, and probably on track for this year as well. So incredible. Yeah, huge amount of
there
interest.
You go. People think there's no interest in the crypto hedge funds, and here you go. There's a lot of interest on that. So James, I want to jump right in on a couple of the elements that were in it, which I think is very interesting. The first point I want to discuss is really, obviously, it was a tough year on crypto, but when I was reading the report, I found it interesting that the percentage of traditional hedge funds that were investing in crypto fell from 37% to 29%. But I think what was also very interesting is that the average AUM that they're invested in, for those who are invested in crypto, grew from 4% to 7%, What do you think caused the decline of the traditional hedge funds investing in crypto? Was it FTX? Was it, you know, other issues like regulatory uncertainty? And why do you think the ones that were invested, they're actually their percentage of AUM invested actually increased?
Great questions, Henry. So I think a couple of things there. I think last year's crypto market events were seen overwhelmingly negatively by traditional hedge funds. We asked them explicitly that question. And about two-thirds of the traditional hedge funds who aren't investing in crypto assets stated to us that their outlook on the asset class was negatively or strongly negatively impacted as a result of last year's events. I think for those investing, I think the average allocation to digital assets by the traditional hedge fund sector last year was around 4%, but around two-thirds of those only had a toehold position with less than 1% of their total hedge fund invested in crypto. So I think a number of those funds last year may have only just started in investing and had a sort of toehold position, obviously weren't true evangelists and therefore probably hadn't experienced the volatility in the market. And likely not anticipated an event like the collapse of the world's second largest crypto exchange. So I think as a result of last year's events, we saw investors across the traditional hedge fund sector, who, as I said, mostly had that toehold position, sort of take a pause and sort of reassess or assess the potential impact on the asset class of those major events. I think obviously the collapse of FTX was a seismic event for the industry, and it shook the crypto markets. So I think only natural for those traditional hedge funds who were still in the earlier stages of investing to maybe take a rain check and as I said, assess those implications on the overall digital asset trading ecosystem before then deciding how and whether to further allocate investments to the asset class. I think what we've seen in recent months and when we undertook the survey, and as you said, Henry, fewer traditional hedge funds allocating to this asset class than a year ago. Yes, it's down from 37% to 29%. The 29% is still a pretty sizable number for a fairly nascent asset class. And as you said, Henry, interestingly, I think for those who are committed to the asset class, the average proportion of AUM invested in crypto almost doubled this year, so from 4% last year to around 7% of their total hedge fund AUM. So I think what we're seeing is perhaps a deepening bifurcation with those traditional hedge funds who are perhaps further along on their journey when it comes to researching and investing and understanding this asset class and the looking to maintain or perhaps increase their AUM exposure to crypto versus those traditional hedge funds who either aren't looking to play in this market or are still just working it out, I think. So I think that could be a reason for this year's results.
It's very interesting because I think the same reaction, if traditional hedge funds are having cold feet, especially those that are at the early stages of their crypto journey, you can imagine what's happening with investors as well. I mean, I've had numerous conversations with many allocators, many of them were actually burned during the FTX saga, who basically are taking a step back from touching digital assets right now. And for many, I think many traditional hedge funds as well, some of them are quite big, as you know. And then, you know, if they have a good investor base, they have a couple billion in the AUM, why rock the boat? Yeah, maybe you can make good money in crypto, but you know what? The why rock the boat as well, I think, has been the one thing I've observed with many of these managers. One thing I want to touch upon about James is the impact of some of the regulatory developments. I remember what struck me in the report was that, correct me if I'm wrong, but something like about a quarter of the hedge funds that were already investing in crypto assets voiced concerns that the increase in the regulatory uncertainty in the U.S. might lead them to reconsider their crypto allocations. You know, there's a lot of concerns like increased legal and compliance costs, banking difficulties. But I found it very interesting that for many of them, the legal uncertainty, regulatory uncertainty in the U.S. could be not a showstopper, but definitely a show slower, if you want, on that perspective. What's your view on that? And is it something you observed across the data pool?
It is, again, another interesting element in our chapter that wasn't covered last year. So we added some new questions. And obviously, regulations for crypto assets continue to evolve globally. It's currently quite fragmented, but we're seeing some of the international standard setters, the likes of the Financial Stability Board and IOSCO, sort of develop new standards and create working groups. So there is a good direction of travel, but it's still, I suppose, a mismatch when you're looking for guidance, and particularly in the United States, where we've seen a much more cautious and an enforcement-focused stance. although obviously there isn't unanimity across the US regulatory agencies, and we are starting to see some movement in Congress. But as you said, sort of the regulatory tightening in the US, perhaps exacerbated by the collapse of certain companies last year, has altered the landscape. So it was interesting that around a quarter, as you said, Henry, of traditional hedge funds stated that that regulatory uncertainty in the US would have a major impact or lead them to reconsider the viability of their crypto asset strategy. And also one of the top challenges cited by hedge fund managers who are currently investing also said that it is the lack of a regulatory regime. And then one of the main obstacles, obviously, was also a lack of regulatory and tax regime clarity. And that particular aspect has been a trend across all the reports in the last 3 years that we've been involved in. I think the industry has long raised concerns, I suppose, over the lack of transparency and urgency in the sort of regulatory decision making. And so it's good to see that some governments and regulatory bodies are attempting to sort of build out comprehensive frameworks. We have a digital assets regulatory group that has been actively involved in supporting regulators and policymakers on the appropriate framing of these new regimes. Interestingly, just another point, Henry, to add, we also recently undertook a snap poll of around 40 or so of our US-based digital asset working group members about which jurisdictions they're most interested in expanding to and what characteristics they most value in a domicile. And when we asked what factors are most important in the choice of jurisdiction, respondents were nearly unanimous in highlighting the regulatory environment. I think it was around 90% described that as very important and 10% saying it was somewhat important. So clearly that is the main driver. And we also uncovered that sort of half of the respondents that are not currently operating in the UK said they are considering entering that market in the next 5 years. And it's interesting that the UK is now looking to develop a regime. The UAE also recorded the strongest percentage of those saying they had a strong interest in the jurisdiction. I think it was something like 70% of respondents expressed some or a strong interest in the Middle Eastern hub. And then in third place, it was Singapore. I mean, I think more than half, around 55% of respondents said that they had a some or a strong interest in gaining a presence there. So it's just interesting to see where those US firms are looking. And clearly there are opportunities for jurisdictions now, as we're seeing this US regulatory lack of clarity. So that was an interesting sort of data point as well I wanted to share.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about the UAE. I mean, we've discussed it many times on the show. I mean, the interest that we're seeing. We even had the Avara, the regulators, on the previous edition of the podcast. I mean, it's been very interesting. I think something that you mentioned, James, is something that I've observed as well, is the crypto industry for many years has been actively looking for more regulatory clarity. I mean, I always say the crypto industry is probably the only industry that pays lobbyists to lobby for more regulations because we want a level playing field. So I think it's very interesting on that side. Touching back on the US point, also what I found very interesting is I think we have to be very realistic that, again, regardless of what how you slice and dice the data, the vast majority of the AUM in hedge funds, I would say alternatives more broadly, comes from the US. So if you're a large hedge fund manager, you know, actively getting involved in something where your home base or home regulator of your majority of your investors is looking at the space is not friendly to, it's a bit like shooting yourself in the foot. So I'm not surprised to see some of the data you mentioned there. I want to touch upon two things as well before moving on to other topics. One of them is a part that I found very surprising in your report. I have to say, I didn't see this coming at all. Was that a quarter of the hedge funds, even those who are not investing in crypto, are looking at tokenization of asset management. Again, tokenization of taking the limited partnership shares or the share, like, you know, subscription shares and tokenizing that. What do you think is driving this? Is it the fact that investing in hedge funds is still archaic and very difficult? Or is it that actually many see this as a way of touching with digital assets without really touching digital assets, if I may?
Yeah, a couple of things here. I think, so again, this was a new element within the survey. We thought we'd just see what the interest is in terms of tokenization within the asset management industry. And yeah, it was interesting to see such high numbers here. And a third of hedge funds who are investing in this asset class already believe that the biggest growth opportunity over the coming year will be tokenization of real assets. And then, as you said, Henry, a quarter of respondents from across the traditional hedge fund industry, including those who aren't currently investing in crypto, said that they're now exploring tokenization in asset management. I suppose there are different elements to this. So we didn't dive deeper into the what, why, how, but that's maybe one for next year's report. But I think the tokenization of a fund, for example, could mean less manual interactions, could increase efficiency and reduce the friction that is commonplace across the asset management world, such as by enabling sort of faster settlement times. There could be opportunities for democratization of asset classes like private markets that may not have been accessible before, although legal certainty risk still remains a hurdle there, I think. And then other areas, and I think the crypto native side of the report covered this more, sort of things like programmability and automation. So think corporate governance and voting, transparency, so clear sort of who owns what and how they're owned, and you can prove whether data about a particular asset is true, reduce settlement time, as I mentioned, and then reduce costs as well eventually. Although I think given still this is very new, we haven't yet seen that materialize. And I think until there's more volume and liquidity here, we're unlikely to see some of those aspects come into fruition. I suppose it's, and we've had this conversation, Henry, I know, in our digital assets working group, it's a bit still chicken and egg, where you need the critical mass of assets that have been devised to make the liquid markets. And perhaps if some of the larger players in the asset management sector, and we know some of them are exploring this, if they were to step in here, then things could quickly pick up. But it is really interesting that the use cases for many of the underlying technologies are expanding beyond just financial transactions with application and errors such as tokenization. So that was a big takeaway from this year's report.
Yeah, I have to say, it's probably one of the things that surprised me the most. You know, I mean, obviously, I'm a big believer in tokenization, although I have to say that I do not think that it's going to happen that quickly. I think anybody who's ever invested in a fund, let alone a hedge fund, I mean, but even basic funds knows, I mean, the process is completely archaic. The fact that the questions, the fact where the subscription documents, the way the lawyers are drafting it, the way the wires are made, I find it very ironic that many of the crypto hedge funds, I'd say even including the hedge fund where I'm a shareholder at, right, where we probably some of the most cutting edge trading, but the way you invest in it is old school legal documentation, paperwork, and a bank wire, right? So I'm not surprised that people are looking at tokenization, although I have to say that I was very positively, pleasantly surprised to see that there's so much optimism. I know my friends who are very involved in tokenization may not like this, but I think there's a lot of hype about it. But I'm not sure that we're going to see any material change or speed of adoption in tokenization anytime soon. One other thing we'll discuss before we move on to other topics in your report, and this is actually another one that really struck me when I read it, was that really, and I quote, I think you guys called it the client reaction or reputational risk, what has over this year regulatory uncertainty as the biggest significant or the most significant barrier to investing in crypto. I mean, literally, it's client reaction and reputational risk. So people do not want to invest in crypto, not because they don't understand it, not because of regulatory uncertainty, but really because of reputational risk. How do you see this? Is this something you've heard or seen in informal conversation with managers as well? Or like, share a bit more color on why do you think this is the case with hedge funds?
Yeah, that's a great question again. And I think what we did in this part of the report is just try to find out what the main barriers were. And if those barriers were to be removed, sort of, are funds going to start investing? And I think before I come on to your point, an interesting data point was that more than a third of respondents not yet invested in crypto assets confirmed to us that they are curious, but waiting for further maturity of the ecosystem. And more than two thirds of those curious about the asset class were billion-dollar hedge funds. So when we delve into what are the barriers that would need to be removed, for the last 2 years' reports, it was regulatory uncertainty or lack of regulatory clarity that was in first position in 2021 and 2022. And this year, as you said, Henry, sort of client reaction, reputational risk, usurp those other risks or other barriers. And I suppose the reason here, and I think we can surmise here, but I think it's due to last year's events, really. That there's probably more sort of questions being asked about this asset class, perhaps, than previously by prospective investors. And obviously, in the conversations you've had with potential investors as well, there was obviously concern over last year's events and how they would impact the overall industry. So I think those conversations have become much more difficult. But hopefully, a year without any major events or blow-ups, I was going to say, will help sort of rebuild that confidence. And that was the overall title of the report, actually, sort of how can they rebuild sort of confidence? What do we need to see from a regulatory perspective to really sort of get back that reputation that this is an asset class to invest in?
You know, I think you're right. I think this is eventually people are going to forget, or, you know, like this is going to, you know, it's going to be the member of FTX will go away. But, you know, what bothers me the most is as the lawsuit starts in October around that time, unless it's delayed again, this is going to come front and center of all the media attention, especially at the, we're never ceasing to discover new crazy facts about FTX. I think the media is going to love that. Unfortunately, I think it's going to bring it back on top of people's minds. But it is what it is. But very interesting data, I think, from the report, James.
What we've seen from our conversations as well over the last sort of 6 months in terms of sort of risk management practices changing. So we've come out with a couple of operational guides at AIMA. We did a guide around custodying digital assets, a guide around trading of digital assets, so looking at the sort of ecosystem and what are some of the sound practices and expectations that an investor or an allocator should have when it comes to this asset class. And I think we've also released a due diligence questionnaire, Henry, that you were a great torchbearer with us on. So these sorts of things, and I imagine you having similar conversations, like the change we're seeing and the sort of maturity of the asset class, 3 to 6 months, it's really taken a turn in a positive way.
Actually, what's your view on this, James? I mean, before we move on to the fire round of questions, we're almost out of time already, is basically, obviously at AIMA, you have the privilege of dealing with all types of hedge fund managers, right? And I would say the crypto hedge fund managers, even within the hedge fund managers, were often seen like the cowboys. How do you see the industry as somebody that has this bird eye view of the entire, of a basically $3-4 trillion industry? How do you see digital assets fund managers, and how do you think they are different or similar to other type of hedge fund managers you see in the industry?
Yeah, there's a couple of things here. I suppose we did ask questions sort of why are firms investing in this space, and that might add a bit of color here. So it was sort of drilling down into which are the reasons or main reasons to invest, and it was the bigger sort of players were saying general diversification. I think everyone agrees sort of long-term outperformance. But then the smaller, which I suppose are closer to the crypto hedge funds, talked about market neutral alpha opportunities. And I think there it's interesting. Obviously, the smaller hedge funds and crypto hedge funds are perhaps more likely to be sort of nimble and opportunistic given their size, perhaps have a different risk appetite or flexibility on their client mandates. So I think that there's definitely differences in the operations and what they can do. But I think what we're definitely seeing is a willingness and a keenness for the digital asset fund managers who are joining AIMA as well and becoming part of our community, wanting to sort of build up their sound practices, downloading our guides. We've just come out with a new guide on valuation of investments. And for the first time ever, we've built in digital assets into that guide. And we're looking to do that across our suite of existing sound practice guides, because there is, I suppose, that demand from our members and our new members who are keen to sort of ensure that they have the sound practices in place. So it's really positive to see.
I think you guys have done a fantastic job on that side. And in the report, James, correct me if I'm wrong, is available on the AIMA website, but I think anybody types Google's, you see CoinShares, AIMA crypto hedge fund report should be able to find it, I presume, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's one way of doing it. Or yeah, it's on the AIMA website, which is www.aima.org. There's a digital assets page there that has all our materials on those guides I mentioned, DDQs and the report.
We'll try to put the link as well in the show notes as well of the show. James, it's really all the time we have. My bell is with me, so I'm going to ask you a quick fire round of questions. I need one or two word answers, and the bell is going to keep us on us. So hope you're ready. Let's rock and roll. James, you're involved in the hedge fund industry. What do you love the most about the hedge fund industry?
The diversity in terms of the different strategies and the intellect as well within the asset class. It's just fascinating. Every day I learn something new.
What hedge fund manager would you want to hire as an intern for the summer?
Oh, good question. Can I say Ray Dalio?
Here we go, Ray Dalio. If you could have a word with Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX, what would you tell him?
I mean, I wish he'd decided to take a different approach.
Here we go.
Yeah.
What amazes you the most about the crypto industry? What amazes you the most about the crypto industry?
I think just the drive from the people within it to sort of they've seen an opportunity in terms of the future of money. And everyone involved in it is really passionate, I think. It stands out, and it's an exciting time.
You're Director of Government Affairs. What is the most difficult thing in dealing in government affairs?
Oh, I suppose the uncertainty is always, you know, we talk about regulatory uncertainty. How do we deal with that, and how do we ensure that the right framework's created, but not a one-size-fits-all? So we really need to see each subset within the sector treated differently. And that's something we're pushing for with digital assets. We want it to be part of financial services, but at the same time, it has many unique characteristics that have to be.
You were mentioning at the start, I was introducing you as somebody who just cycled 1,000 miles. What is the one race or event in cycling you would love to compete in one day if you had a chance? I could have guessed that. And James Delaney, the Director of Government Affairs at AMA, to finish it off, a traditional question at the Future of Money podcast. James, if you could have lunch or dinner with one person dead or alive, lunch or dinner with one person dead or alive, who would it be?
Can I choose two? It would have to be either Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United manager, who won 13 Premier League titles, I think would be fascinating, or probably Leonardo da Vinci if it's a dead person. So, yeah, would both be.
My God, two extremes, literally. Well, James, that was great to have you. James, if people want to get in touch with you and learn more about the work you do, how can they find you?
Yeah, so AMA website, www.ama.org. They'll find all the information there.
Awesome. James, thank you very much. I have to say the work that AMA has done on this topic has been very important. And obviously, I had the privilege of being involved not only on the creation of this report, actually, a couple of years ago with a cigar story that I just said, but really, I think, contributing to a lot of the working groups and committees you guys have put together. And thank you for all the great work you guys have done on bringing forward the topic of digital assets in the alternatives space. Thank you very much, everybody. Hope this was a good episode. James, thank you for being with us. And thank you very much at home. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating. It really helps with more people discover the show. And thank you very much, everybody. And stay tuned for another episode of The Future of Money. And see you guys soon.